the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
AV Week is produced and distributed through a partnership with AV Nation and Rave Publications. For more information, go to ravepubs.com/AV Nation. This is AV Week, episode 38, recorded Friday, April 20th, 2012. It's not a hologram.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
AV Week.
Online.
This is AV Week. It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. I am your host, Tim Albright. Thank you so much for joining us. This week, we have a couple of lovely ladies, and then a yahoo that sits beside me. The lovely ladies, the first up, is the lovely Dawn Mead. She's also known as AV Dawn. She is the marketing and media coordinator for NetAV, as well as a blogger and other sort of really cool things. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
The other lovely lady is Miss Sarah Abrams. She is the editor of Rave Publications. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And also Michael Drainer. He is the sound and AV systems manager for Tech Electronics in St. Louis, Missouri.
Hello, folks.
This week, we're going to talk about Tupac being back from the dead, sort of, kind of. He performed last weekend, and I'm still not quite sure how.
The Tupac?
Tupac, you know, yes. The Tupac. Biggie, Tupac, anyhow. AMX came out with a configuration software and why that's important. The Rave Publications, the guys that host our fine podcast and other stuff, have come out with Reader's Choice Awards. We're going to go down those. And a new place where you can get RoboCop. Because I'm really excited about it. But first, we're going to talk about IKEA. I'm sorry. I'm just all giggly this Friday. If you don't know who IKEA is or what IKEA is, it's a furniture company. And before you turn off the podcast and think to yourself, I wonder why I'm listening about furniture and a AV show, they're selling HDTVs. And yes, that's keep going with me. Keep with me here. Basically, what they're doing is, and IKEA is a furniture company. They have a couple of number of stores around the country. They have very, very, very rabid fans. And so you are going to go into IKEA and be able to buy a piece of furniture with a built-in HDTV. Gary Kay has been saying for years, if you know, to not base your business solely on the flat panel business. And actually, he wrote a blog post about this, and I quote, "If you're not making money selling HDTVs now, you never will. So get out of it. Stop it." Dawn, is this just one more list of why you shouldn't be selling, or at least making it your primary business selling HDTVs? Or is it the last nail in the coffin and we should all jump ship as quickly as possible?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a jump ship situation. I mean, there's always going to be a reason to carry various products of various types. But if that's your entire business model, is making money on equipment, and not just flat panels or HDTVs, but any piece of equipment in 2012, if that's your business model, I said this in a recent column for Rave, if that's your business model, put up your crimpers and dust off your resume, because it isn't going to pay in the long run. I mean, we are truly no longer in a manufacturing society. We are truly no longer in a product society. It's a service society. And if you're not making money doing service as an integrator, forget it. And I mean, the fact that IKEA now has LCD panels and flat panels, HDTVs, it's just one more step in that direction. I mean, we heard this about a decade ago when Staples started carrying projectors. You know, it's the same thing. They've become a commodity, and it's just not the big margin markup. you know, fancy thing that it used to be. It's just a changed, you know, it's a sea change. We have to deal with it and move on.
Gary and I actually talked about this on our daily show the other day, and he indicated that one of his people that he works with is one of the world's biggest IKEA fans. Apparently she's not. She just likes to go there a couple times in her life. So that person is Sarah. So Sarah, is this is he right, or should, you know, like Don said, should we dust off our resume and get out of this business?
Well, I don't think that any integrator has been making a lot of money on especially consumer displays for a while, so that's not that surprising. It's more just like the epitome of commoditization coming true, because you're not really buying a TV, you're buying a piece of furniture. So they've turned a TV into a piece of furniture. Mm. And sort of more interestingly, they are doing some of the work the integrator used to do for us, for the customer. They're integrating all of the pieces together, including the audio and the content provider, which is the Blu-ray player in this case, and the display, into a nice looking piece of furniture. So all you have to do is plug it in. That's not to say that there's not tons of opportunity for systems integrators in elsewhere. I mean, yeah, there's still obviously this is just one thing.
Yeah. All right, Michael, you're an integrator. Should you sign up to be an IKEA dealer?
Abso-freaking-lutely. Man, my wife wants to go to IKEA every chance she gets. Holy cow.
But your wife aside, I mean,
you know, we haven't, you know, proactively promoted displays in quite some time. You know, they're in addition to our systems, we sell solutions, we sell outcomes, we don't sell hardware. And if you're in the integration business and you're trying to make it selling hardware and you're finding the struggle, man, you have got it all wrong. And just talking to what Don and Sarah saying, it's about the services. And I think, you know, Sarah, you made a good point that they're taking a display and turning it into a piece of furniture, but what they're really doing is they're providing a service, and they're taking that service of integration and incorporating it into a product that they already do really well. And so it's the perfect marriage. It really is. And it makes it easy for the consumer to go pick out a piece of furniture that looks good, and you're not shopping specs on displays and all this kind of stuff. It's like, oh yeah, that looks good, I'll buy that. I think it's cool. You know, for those of us who are in the service business, it's not really a threat.
So you don't think people are walking up and going, okay, you know, this cabinet comes with this HDTV that has this spec. People aren't doing that. They're just saying that cabinet is cute, and oh, by the way, it comes with this TV as an accessory almost.
All right. We got two ladies on the line here. Who makes the purchasing decisions?
Women.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Well, and the other thing is that we have to keep in mind is, you know, aside from geeks like us who are in the industry and love this stuff, it isn't every person in the world, male or female, they don't necessarily read spec sheets on every single thing. Yeah. They hear a few buzzwords here and there, or one of their buddies that is a geek knows this stuff and says, you want to get a blah, blah. But they don't know what a blah, blah is or even care. They just want something that looks good.
I don't think anyone that buys this product is going to be thinking about specs.
No, absolutely right. Not.
I mean, I did read in another article that it's an LED TV, and that's probably all the spec they need to know.
Well, see, that would make me even buy it even more.
Yeah.
Regardless of how cute it is, that I like LEDs, so, you know.
Go ahead, Sarah.
All right. Sarah, go first.
We're going to put a cop at the intersection here.
Ask whether it's an edge-lit LED TV or the other kind.
Or backlit, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, backlit.
Yeah. The question is, does it look good once you put it in there?
Right.
You know, does it look good around the, the hearth.
Yeah, and they're not going to even think about that. They're going to say, does it look good in the store? And that's right. going to correlate to them thinking that exactly. it should look good in the living room.
Well, because really, right. if you get down to display technology, I mean, you go to any retail establishment and you look at them, really, they're all pretty darn close. I mean, there's differences, and the geeks really notice it, and maybe the tech didn't calibrate the brightness on one as well as they did the other, whatever the case is. But
maybe.
You get them away from one another, they all look the same. You know, and yeah. so I'm going to get emails on that one, but really to the consumer, it's equal.
Yeah, no, you're right. And what I find interesting about this is it's almost a throwback concept, because prior to, you know, my lifetime, or even just, you know, in the early parts of my lifetime, TVs were furniture.
Oh, yeah, the big yeah. cabinets.
My mom had, and until recently, I mean, this is kind of sad, but, you know, she kept going, this big honking piece of beautiful furniture that matched her living room suit, you know, and it was a TV, and she didn't care what kind of components it had, and my dad didn't care what kind of buttons or inputs or outputs, as long as it made them, they were able to watch their news and their Lawrence Welkin, whatever, and it was this big matching cute piece of furniture. And so, you know, we've gone from that to everybody cares about every component and every spec and every little detail. And now we're kind of reverting back to it's furniture again.
Right,
it's a one piece, one solution. This is going to look great in my living room and the picture's good. So what the heck? Let's get it. It's simple.
I have a friend go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were finished.
I would say that's where we're going. It's sort of like very hipster retro, I guess.
Hipster retro.
Wow.
I had a friend that turned one into an aquarium.
Nice.
And forgive me because I don't remember what show Matt Scott said this on, but Matt Scott, he runs Omega Audio Video up in London, Ontario. He has a friend of his, or a friend of his dad's, who for years had the tube replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point even had a flat panel installed into their console. Because they liked the piece of furniture so much that they just kept upgrading the actual guts to match whatever it was that was, you know, the latest, greatest technology. So, yeah,
right.
That's a very good point. I like that. This week is NAB. NAB is the National Association of Broadcasters. It's a really big show in Vegas. And one of the guys that have kind of made some noise this week when it comes to broadcasters as well as AV, and that's the folks over at Red. Now, not that you guys need to know this, but when we do these stories, I'll send the panel out a list of you know, stories that we're doing, and we'll shoot back and forth before we actually press the record button. And my buddy Michael over here is going, okay, so what's the big deal about this whole Red 4K cinema laser projector? I said Red 4K cinema laser projector. Freaking laser projector, Michael. That's what the big deal
cool.
is.
It's cool. I said it's cool. You
no,
know?
You didn't. You're sure. like, what's the big deal? I don't like lasers. I like CRTs. I like three cannons. That's what you like. You want a freaking Barco.
Three guns.
With
CRT.
Three guns. And it's the size of a freaking Yugo. And weighs twice as much.
Yeah, very true.
So why isn't this a big deal?
No, it is a big deal. I think it's pretty cool. When I first read the article, I was like, okay, another projector. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute, Red. Those are the guys that made the camera. Oh, wait. Oh, okay. It just took a minute. So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it is an interesting proposition that the manufacturer of the acquisition hardware is actually making the display hardware as well.
But it's smart, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, to have full control point to point. But you know, it's really not a lot different than, you know, take Panasonic, for instance, or Sony, right? They made projectors and they made cameras, but they really didn't go into the seamless integration from the acquisition to the display. And I think that's something that Red is really trying to approach here with the quality of the product. And the product being not the hardware, but the content that is being created.
Do me a favor. Don't correlate Red with Sony right now. It'd be a bad thing.
This is true.
Sarah.
Okay, in their better years. How
okay,
about that?
Thank you. Sarah, we were also talking about this. Another cool thing is that you've got a freaking Red laser projector for under 10 grand.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple interesting things here. The fact that Red, a really well-respected camera manufacturer is entering the projector market, which obviously they have a lot of big fans. And two, that the alleged price point of this projector is under 10 grand for the home theater version. Mm-hmm. If they get there, that's an incredible price point. I mean, Sony's 4K projector for the home theater was priced around 25 grand. So there's not that much out about this projector yet. We don't know the imaging technology. We don't know the brightness. We don't know when it is going to ship. So there's a lot to be discovered about it, but it's certainly interesting.
Well, Dawn, we all love vaporware, and I'm not saying this is. But Sarah raises a lot of really good important points. We don't know ship dates.
I didn't go to NAB, but I would certainly. I think it's weird to demo a projector and have no one come home with any of those questions answered. Although from what I've read online, it looks like it might be a modular laser projector with a modular light engine, which if that's the case, that would be pretty interesting because laser projectors, the other ones we've seen, have had issues with brightness. And I don't know what the point of a 4K projector is, laser or not, if it's not super bright.
Yeah.
Especially a commercial version.
My question is, did they actually demo the thing? Because all the pictures I see on Engadget sites, they've got a picture of this beautiful projector sitting behind safety glass. It's like,
they supposedly
didn't demo it. Did they?
But and everyone said it looked awesome, but no one has any information on anything else. So I really
didn't. Somebody have like a light meter in their pocket and just run up to the screen real quick and say,
"Yeah,
no, because the laser will blind you."
Oh, it was demoed on a 24-foot screen at NAB, so and no one complained about the brightness.
Nice.
But there's, I mean, they're gearing it towards 3D, which is pretty smart. But I don't know. I looked up to see if they were an exhibitor at Infocom, and they are not. And as far as I know, they're also not planning to exhibit at CEDIA yet this year, so which would make sense for them.
There's a space available.
Yeah, that's what I hear, too.
Sorry, I couldn't let a week go by without poking our friends at
Amazon. Hey, they could put a 24-foot screen there.
Yeah, absolutely. Don, one thing that in the documentation that is available says the home model will ship, quote unquote, sometime this year. So let's talk about vaporware for now.
Famous last words.
Do you really want to go down that road?
No. But talk about for a second about the, you know, yes, you know, we don't know a whole lot, but is it just the idea and the concept cool? The guys that have given us the red camera, like Michael said, they're giving us a point to point, you know, full integration. You can shoot in red, and then you can broadcast or project it in red.
Well, I you know, that is a good concept. I would like to see them pull it off. I mean, everybody wants to be the sole source of technology and product and distribution and everything, you know, get as much profit out of a particular market or segment as possible. And so in that regard, you know, good luck to them. I've got to be completely honest. You know, I don't play in the broadcast space. I never have. You know, when we integrated, if there was something broadcast involved, unless it was something, you know, kind of small and barely broadcast, we would sub it out or refer someone or partner. I mean, I've never been a big broadcast person. I'd never heard of Red until I got these articles this week. And, wow. You know, they've been around since 99. They have these fabulous cameras that everybody raves about. But being in the Infocom space, let's just say that, you know, commercial integration, even home integration, it's been like a non-name. It's like, who are these people? What do you mean they're really well-respected or regarded? Because I don't know them. They could be, you know, this is one of the 5x5 booths in the back of the room that you just, oh, okay, welcome. You know, who are you? You know what I'm saying?
They're so people too.
I get that. And sometimes those little 5x5 booths turn out to be the best company and product you could find, and they end up growing huge. I mean, a lot of manufacturers we really respect and use a lot today started out that way. Red, I think, if they're as fabulous as as you say they are with the broadcast cameras, and they want to truly break into the cinema projector market, they really need to have a booth at Infocom and or CEDIA. I mean, because the people that are going to be selling and installing these things don't know them. Well, and, you know, I mean, it's great that we're even featuring them on this podcast, that people are going to get word and say, oh, yeah, Red, I know them from their cameras, or, oh, who? We should check that out. But, you know, they've got this great sucking identity crisis right now with the people that they're going to be hopefully selling to. And, you know, I hope that they can overcome that, because if the price point is true and if the technology is true, it sounds like they've got a good product, you know? So you don't want to lose that, I guess, yeah, sorry, my brain just left me.
That's all right. Yeah, I'm just curious to know.
You don't want to lose that inertia with, you know, with the buzz and everything, because people are like, who in the hell is Red?
Yeah, you know? I want to know what their focus really is here. You know, I mean, based on the price point, you would think that it's, you know, higher end consumer, you know, commercial integration. But Red is really known for cinema cameras. Their specialty is in, you know, the creative works and whatnot. And I kind of see them owning that little piece of that market, that niche market. And I kind of see this projector fitting in the same way. It's going to have its niche. It's going to have its cult following. I don't know that it's necessarily going to be able to go mainstream, and that you're going to have every integrator on the corner jumping up and down to sell it.
But see, right. I would think you would. Now, you guys make a good, very good point. They need to be, I would say, at least at Infocom. I mean, Cedia, you could do it for the home stuff, but I can see where this would be a huge thing for live staging.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
go ahead.
I'm confused on where they're positioning the projector.
Right.
I mean, they just
have
this information about how there's going to be an under $10,000 home theater version, and then a commercial model with support for larger venues, and that's the only information that's out there. But I actually think that the application for like live events makes the most sense, because they released just late last year the Red Ray server, mm-hmm. where you can record directly from a 4K Red camera to the server, and then I'm thinking that you'll be able to like connect the projector to the server and play that content live, which is like would be an excellent application for live event. But there's no mention of that kind of application, and I don't understand like that the value for a home theater version when there's no content that they're making available right now. I don't know. Like, what are you going to play on it?
That's true. But the same argument could be made for Sony's 4K, too. I mean, that's right now some of the – and I think I've said this before. When it comes to, you know, chicken and the egg, do you have the display technology first and then along comes the content, or do you do it vice versa? And the way we've seen it over the last 10 years – the display has come first, whether that was HD and the infrastructure for that. And then, oh, yeah, stations came online and Blu-ray and HD DVD came out. 3D is the same way, you know.
Well, I totally agree with you there. It's more that Sony has like a large hand in the consumer space, whether you guys hate them or not. They're already...
It's a matter of whether they're going to be there or not. They're not going to exist in another 5 years.
Well, putting all that aside, like, I don't know.
Well, and maybe the point
Sony
is
to make sure that 4K content is coming to market.
True.
Yes.
True. Given. Yes.
Eventually.
Well, and that's what I was about to say. Maybe the point is Red is bringing out these projectors now to get a jump on. You know, they're already making these fabulous cameras. They're already making these fabulous servers. These Red projectors, especially the home one, may first not be, you know, designed for the market of us guys. It's like trying to get Lucas to put one in his home theater that he uses to screen his movies.
I would totally understand there being like a super niche market of like, you know, directors and DPs who want to review content there that they just shot that's sitting on their Red Ray server on this projector. But I mean,
but how many of those are there?
They've never made a consumer product before. So with a 4K laser projector seems weird.
What about this, though? What if – okay, so Sony can bring this to market, absolutely, and they can bring the content to market, absolutely, because they have the mechanism and they have the channels. So what if – and I'm spitballing here. What if these guys are saying, okay, you know what? Sony's going to do it, and they've shown their hand. They have the projector. They have the infrastructure. They have the Hollywood ties for that. We're going to be the first competitor to Sony and the 4K.
That is what I'm guessing they're doing. It just is kind of a...
You think it's a little bit early?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, maybe they're trying to drive the market. You know, you said the player or the projector or the hardware comes first and then the technology develops. Maybe they're just jumping in there with Sony to try to push 4K to bring more content to market sooner so that there will be a market for these things.
Well, and then at that stage, it is all about market share.
Yeah. And you guys have all made a really good point. These guys need to be at Infocom, and I'm no way, shape, or form trying to sell booths at Infocom, but but they do. I mean, you guys are right. If you guys have never heard of them, or Don, you've never heard of them, that's an issue. Because I mean, I've heard of them because of broadcast, and because that's where they live. But you start producing projectors, and I'm sorry, you start producing projectors, you need to be in the AV world in some way, shape, or form, whether it's the 5x5 booth or not. You need to have a presence and let your presence be known. Otherwise, when people are starting to think about 4K and 4K installations, I don't care how early you were into the market, you're going to be left behind if nobody knows about you.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think historically the issue has just been, for them to get the penetration has just been sheer price for them to be. Because my understanding, and I may not know this, I may not be accurate, is that these cameras are very, very expensive. It's not like going out and buying a 3-chip broadcast camera.
No, they start at $15,000 for just the body.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Actually, looking on their website right now, what's this Gunner package with the body and a basic lens is $50,000. Mm-hmm. Okay, so $70,000 for the full cinema package, and that doesn't include all the lens selections.
No, the $15,000 one is their version of like a GL1. A Canon GO. Yeah. So they will go down smaller.
Right.
But yeah, their full, replacement to a film camera, you're right, is 50 to 60 grand. So.
Yeah.
All right. From the world of AMX and control, AMX launches Rapid Project Maker, configure system without programming. Woohoo!
And we fire all the programmers.
Well, here's the thing, and Ray posted something as well, and about this, and actually Gary and I talked about this on the Daily Show. The reason that this is important is a couple things. First of all, AMX was the last company to do this. They were the last control manufacturer that, in essence, you almost needed to know some version of C, C++, Python, some sort of actual honest-to-goodness programming language to program a system, right? Well, this, it doesn't get rid of all the programmers, Michael, Mr. Evil Integrator.
sorry.
But I know where you're going with this. This gives you, the integrator, the opportunity to configure, and I'm going to use that word, a simple system. Now, are you seriously thinking about firing all your programmers?
Sure.
Sure.
No, not at all. Tim, you and I have talked about this, and you and Gary talked about this the other day on the Daily Rave as well, and that's the fact that a lot of these applications create what we call bloatware. It just bloats your programs, and my video's running here. They actually debuted this at Infocom 2011. In June of last year, and I guess it's just now shipping. But the thing it does is it allows you to get simple systems up and going quickly and effectively and affordably. And, it's just one more step toward the commoditization, as we should say, of control systems. As you can see, we're progressing that way where it's just configurations and not programming. Right? Tim?
Yes.
No. So you're a Crestron programmer and you don't like System Builder.
No, I don't.
Right? Because why? It bloats everything up, but your systems don't run as efficiently. But for a small little conference room, it works just fine.
It works. Don, Mr. AV Don, has some things to do with programming and things of that nature. I'm not going to ask you to give his opinion necessarily, but what is your opinion about not just AMX, but just these sorts of softwares in general?
I can give you both of our opinions because,
Well, I'm not asking you to. You can offer if you would like.
The gist of it is these things are great for the small mom and pop integrator or the integrator whose programmer is so busy he's pulling his hair out or they can't afford on a tight project to hire an outside programmer. you know, these sorts of things, we've been crying for them for the years. Just give us something quick and easy to get it up and running that attack with some training and, you know, a certificate from the, you know, without sending them for weeks and weeks of programming training. Right. You know, this, so in that regard, it's really good. If it's like, and you guys brought up the topic, the Crestron system builder, you know, 9 times out of 10, our experience with that was Mr. AV Dom would end up cursing and you know, yelling at the thing and shaking his fist at the computer, and then he'd just program it himself.
Amen, sister.
You know, and so it's, like you said, it causes bloat. It always causes glitches. Anytime you automate anything like this, there are going to be glitches, and there will be a real programmer needed to make things work perfectly, because, you know, a pre-programmed wizard-based solution is never going to account for every weird little quirky thing that a customer wants done in their control system. And believe me, they come up with some weird, quirky requests. You know, we once had to program a control system to open and close a garage door that the company was using to divide its conference room. I'm dead serious.
That's brilliant.
Dare do it.
Oh my gosh. Bye-bye Airwall.
They thought it was clever, and it was clever for about 5 minutes, and then it was just noisy and awful, and they hated it.
Oh,
I bet they did.
But the gist is, like, you know, how do you program that even with a system builder or an RPM?
Yeah.
You don't. You have to get in there with the code and figure out what the heck kind of control the little clicker from the garage door requires, and, you know, work it into the actual control system. So there's always going to be a call for programmers. These make it easier for the guys without programmers or just in a hurry to get it done. But I don't think it's the be-all, end-all. That, you know, the programming field will still exist. And so, you know, but yay AMX for finally getting something like this.
Well, yeah, yay for AMX for that. But, Sarah, a couple years ago, I was talking with some integrators. Actually, it was Infocom 2 or 3 years ago, whenever Extron released their TouchLink stuff. And... Mm-hmm. He was a small mom and pop, and he said, you know what? He made the comment, if this works like they say it does, and it has, it's turned out that yes, the TouchLink stuff does work by and large the way Extron says it does. He said, you know, I could, you know, not fire all my programmers, but, you know, not hire as many as I do. And while my guys are installing this stuff on site, I can sit down and bata bata boo, kick it out, and I'm my own programmer at that point.
Do that again.
Bata bata boo. Oh, jeez. Anyhow.
It was weird.
So does this kind of, you know, like these guys have been saying, it gives the smaller guys a leg up, and you don't necessarily have to have, you know, a full-time AMX programmer who can get expensive from time to time, you know?
Well, I guess I agree with Don, and there's always going to be, as long as the system is set up the way it is now, there's always going to be a need for custom programmers. And this does allow smaller integrators to get their foot in the door and become AMX or Crestron, whoever dealers, depending on which system you're using, to do simple systems without having a programmer on staff. So I think that ultimately the way this will transform the industry is you're going to see more freelance programmers and companies making do when they can with these programmable type systems, or I don't even know, the wording is confusing. The customizable systems, I guess.
Let's call the ones who use the program configurations or configurators.
Yes, configurable
configurators.
Programs.
And guys who actually type the code, you know, programmers.
Well, you know what though? I mean, Sarah, you're absolutely right, and we've already started to see that in the industry, that, you know, we're seeing more independent programmers pop up because of systems like IP Link TouchLink and System Builder. And now that AMX is getting on board, you're going to be able to see integrators handle more of their own day-to-day type systems. And so you only have to bring in that specialty programmer for your customization of larger deployments and systems that have higher levels of complexity. And it makes it a win-win for everybody, really, at the end of the day, because the integrator gets the win of not having to pay a full-time programmer on staff, and they can still service the needs of their customers. And the programmer gets to do what the programmer loves to do day in and day out, and doesn't get stuck in an office shuffling paperwork when he doesn't have a system to do. So I definitely see it a win.
And ultimately, this just means that more customers are going to be able to afford basic control in their systems.
Right.
So there's it's not like it's going to totally take away customers from the custom programmers.
No. Right.
So I think it just opens up the end user market more.
No, that's a very good point. The fact that it should at least, you know, lower some of the end cost to the end user, at least for more simple programs.
Oh, absolutely, so. It does. I mean, Tim, you've done systems that the programming cost is as much as the hardware. I mean,
I like those systems.
Well, sure you do, but you know, it really puts it out of reach for people who need control but can't afford it because that cost is so high. So.
I just bought a house. I need more systems like that. Are you kidding me, dude? Seriously. All right. This story is everywhere. Let's start with the lovely and talented Sarah Abrams. Jump over to the old and grumpy John Huntington and the boys over at Engadget. Actually, Sarah and John are saying the same thing. Roughly the same thing. And the guys over at Engadget have...
Yeah, I'm just not really angry about it.
Yeah, no, you're not. Let's reveal what we're talking about first, and that's Tupac Shakur. Tupac performed over the weekend at Coachella. It was cool. It was awesome. It wasn't...
It was creepy.
It was creepy? I thought it was
exactly.
Cool. I thought it was neat.
It was creepy.
Now, had
I'm
he
sorry,
been on
can
stage...
Can you imagine having been at that audience, in the audience, having been at a music festival for a couple of days, seeing a rapper on stage who looks totally real and has been dead for 16 years, I'd be really confused.
And you possibly, you know, some mind-altering substances in your yeah, system.
Possibly.
Yeah, I could see how that'd be creepy. See, if Elvis and John F. Kennedy had been on stage with him, then that would have been creepy.
No, they're with the aliens, man.
They're the aliens, yeah. No, Biggie. Biggie should have been on stage with him. That would have been awesome.
Actually, speaking of Elvis, they did. It was a different technology, but there was a thing at where Elvis performed with Celine Dion a couple of years ago at an award show. So
Tim, yeah. Explain for our listeners what we're talking about here.
So here's the thing. At Coachella, there was what Engadget is calling a hologram. And the reason I'm saying it that way is that both Sarah and John Huntington are taking issue with the word hologram. What happened was Tupac came on stage and performed a few songs. It was obviously a video of him doing so. And the company that made it possible, AV Concepts, it's calling it sort of a hologram, but it wasn't really. And I'll say, you know, the John Huntington part. John's blog post is... It's not a expletive hologram part two, because he talked about this a couple years ago. It's something called Pepper's Ghost. And Sarah, since you wrote the blog post of the four of us, we'll kind of let you go through this. But it wasn't really a hologram, was it?
Yeah. I mean, he's just angry because the technical definition of a hologram means that you can walk around it and it looks 3D from all angles. So yeah. If it was really a hologram, you could walk to the side of the stage and you'd see Tupac's head. But really, if you walked to the side of the stage, in this instance, you would see nothing except Snoop Dogg, which would be pretty cool in and of itself.
Yeah.
But
Whoa. Where did Snoop Dogg come from here?
He was performing on stage with
him.
Okay.
Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg were performing with...
Tupac.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Dead Tupac. But from the front, because I've actually seen this live in person, which I talked about a little bit in the blog post... it looks completely realistic. And the place I saw it was at Infocom a couple years ago. The same integration company, AV Concepts, had a setup where they had live musicians who were playing in London broadcast on stage. And you could go on stage and they had some people like perform with them or just go stand on stage. I went and stood on stage. And there's a video in my blog post where you can see, I think actually SCN's editor on stage with... And she's in Orlando, and the performers on stage, who look like they're there on stage with her, are actually, you know, across the pond in London. It was pretty cool. And it looks very realistic.
This to me is really cool. And some of this also gets into telepresence, actually, which is a weird way to go with this. But
yeah.
I saw something similar to this. And I don't know if it was Life Size or somebody, but a telepresence company that did, it was the, you know, the conference room table and on the other side of the, there was a, just a, basically a giant, you know, video screen. And they also had a conference table, and it wasn't a hologram, but it was awfully convincing, and awfully, you know, realistic when it comes to, you know, it wasn't quite 3D because there was no glasses and stuff like that, but it was very realistic. So,
yeah, there's a good example of this at the Abraham Lincoln Library in Springfield, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a really nice presentation using the Pepper's Ghost methodology for giving that illusion, and I mean, it's really what it is, just an illusion, but yeah, either way, dead Tupac is just weird.
I was gonna say, I think the technology part of it's very cool.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, the telepresence applications, and there are a lot of applications where this sort of technology would be brilliant,
right?
But for the most part, it was just creepy.
Yeah.
So is that you wearing the dress?
That's not me. That is, I think, Kirsten Nelson from SCN. But I did go up on stage. And
you got to put that link out on the show.
We had
page.
A video of it a while ago. I need to go see if they could find the video, because this is like 2 or 3 years ago.
We actually tried to get Kirsten.
It's actually, this has been performed a bunch of times before, because in 2006, they used this exact same technology by the same people, Musion and AV Concepts, at the Grammys, where Madonna performed with the Gorillaz. And
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, yeah, it's the exact same thing. It's just gotten a lot of tension again.
Okay, I got to pull that up.
This time they did it with a dead person.
Well, and the Gorillaz were, if you don't know who they were actually it was a bunch of people from multiple different bands, but their personalities were actually cartoons for a long time.
Right.
Yeah, they were a virtual band that put out real music. Yeah.
Although
that's really good.
I looked it up because I wasn't sure, but the Tupac performance is also animated. It's not a previous recording.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a very good animation.
Yeah, no kidding.
It is pretty good. You can tell a little bit from his movement if you watch the whole video, but somewhere in one of these articles, you can find out the animation studio that did it. They did a really good job and spent months doing it.
It looks pretty darn real. That's...
Yeah.
Oh, there's the Gorillaz.
I think it's called Digital Domain is the name of the animation company, but yeah, it did a good job.
Very cool. All right, moving on to the next blog that we're going to talk about. For some reason, every time that we have Dawn on, she writes a blog that week, and I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but it always gets me thinking. And this one was really cool, too, because I love Arthur. I don't like the remake because I didn't even watch it, to be honest about it. Dawn puts in there that she's not a big fan of Russell Brand, and neither am I. but it got her to thinking and got me to thinking. Here's the question, and we'll go around the horn and we'll start with Miss Dawn. Would anyone approach system integration as a hobby for fun? Or what are you doing, Michael?
Sorry, it's the Gorillaz.
Well, mute it.
I'm trying.
For fun on a Saturday afternoon instead of flying a kite. So basically, would you do this as just for the heck of it as a hobby instead of, you know, stamp collecting or something?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
You're fired. Wow. You are so fired.
Hey, I'm having fun over here.
Dawn.
The question was,
thank you.
In the movie, I'll give a little backstory for those that haven't seen the movie, because the fact that they remade Dudley Moore's Arthur and then put Russell Brand in the lead is just appalling to me anyway. But at one point, the redeeming feature of the movie, other than Helen Mirren, was the fact that he goes on this rant about a newspaper ad looking for a systems integration professional. And he says, who would do this as an amateur? Would anyone approach systems integration as a hobby for fun on a Saturday afternoon instead of flying a kite? And my husband, Mr. AV Dawn, and I laughed out loud at that. It was like the one redeeming feature of the movie. But, you know, it's kind of true. And the way I answered it in my column is, well, yes, there are systems integration hobbyists out there. Everybody in the industry is one, because we all, I mean, admit it, if you don't have some sort of home theater or home automation or home something at your house that you've put together from pieces from the office and pieces appropriated from dumpsters and eBay and whatever else, you're not really in the AV world or the computer world, even for computer systems integrators. I mean, the people that do it for a job have a passion and do it for a hobby as well. But there's also a lot of other integration hobbyists who are just, you know, AV hobbyists who are IT guys or AV hobbyists who are just, instead of being gearheads working on a car, they work on home theater. Or, you know, it's one of those things. There are people doing it as amateurs on Saturday for fun instead of flying a kite. And they sometimes try to poach our business. And mm-hmm. then we get it back when they screw up and we have to fix it.
Well, and Michael, not to do a complete... Are you back with us, by the way?
Yeah. I was just looking at Dawn's little video here with Arthur.
Not to be a complete, have a complete shameless plug, but us and Rave have a fabulous show hosted by our buddy George Tucker called DIY. And it's good all show. About these guys.
Yes, it is.
You know, all about these guys who do this on the weekend and do it on the side. This month, he talked to people who make their own instruments, which is pretty cool. So.
Not only that, we have Michael Martin and some of the other wonderful people in the music business on. Very good.
So do you do this for the heck of it or on the side instead of flying a kite?
Man, I'll tell you what. When I got started in this business, I did. Now I don't have time anymore. I really don't. I wish I did. But I think we would be amiss to say that the majority of those of us that are seriously in the AV business are tweak heads to some sort of, you know, to some level. If you're in the integration business, every one of my staff members, whether they're in sales, or engineering or technician, just like you said, Dawn, they've got something going on the side. You know, they're helping a family member, relative, and tweaking it for the fun of it or just because they have the expertise to do it. But you know what's interesting with that is we build these lovely elaborate systems for our customers and then we just hodgepodge everything together for ourselves.
Right.
It's because we can't afford these.
That's absolutely right. You know, like you hit the nail on the head with eBay. I've got some eBay searches set up looking for Pro 2 processors and Ethernet cards and, you know, different little things like that.
Exactly. I mean, in the last month, we got a new, we're an AMX house because we had a salvage AMX system in our house from way back. And we just got a new, what were the little R2 handheld controllers?
Oh, yeah.
The Mio, mm-hmm. Mio R4. We just got an R4 and a thermostat controller to tie into the AMX system. And you're exactly right, though. Everyone that's in this and does it for a living ends up with the horrible system at home with the rack that looks like a cable explosion happened behind it. And you know, it ends laying about half crimped. And it's always a work in progress.
And for me, a wife always frustrated because the system never works right.
Right. Exactly.
Or you changed something.
Or because I changed it and didn't tell her. Yeah.
Well, and actually, and Sarah, you guys, I don't know if it was you or Gary or somebody, turned me on to the thermostat you guys got at the office. And it's...
The Nest thermostat?
That thing, yeah.
Which one was it?
Nest. The Nest thermostat.
Oh, Nest, yeah, yeah.
And so it's if it's not like, you know, full-blown, you know, control systems, but it's simple stuff like the Nest, mm-hmm. which allows you to geek out and technologize your house on a somewhat simple basis, I guess.
Well, I guess I think that every AV company, whether it was an integrator or a manufacturer, probably started out in someone's garage. So, I don't know, tinkerers make the industry go round.
Yes.
Well, if you think about it, almost every integrator you know started like that. I mean, they all started fairly small. I mean, even the little guys. I mean, you got the big guys. You got some that, you know, started as corporate entities, but most of the guys I know that are doing fairly well these days, it was a one-man shop at the beginning, and it just started as a gearhead passion.
Well, and one of my favorite people to talk about when we talk about stuff like this is our buddy Rich Fregosa, who 20 years ago, you know, sat down and watched a VHS, you know, instruction tape on how to repair VCRs. And he'll still tell you to this day he's a VCR repairman. Yeah, he's a rather well-paid VCR repairman, but he's a VCR repairman nonetheless, you know. And he does, you know, system. In all seriousness, he does system programming and a whole, you know, whole lot of other things. But that's how he started out. He started out very simply, and now he's, you know, has a fairly, you know, successful business doing it. So yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple, maybe 6 months ago, there was a pretty interesting article in Forbes about Crestron and George Feldstein, and he started Crestron in his garage just making, you know, a little problem-solving product.
Yeah,
probably relays.
Yeah, well, something like that.
It's why one of the biggest comments I hear from new people in the industry is, you mean I can get paid to do this for a living? Really? Because they're the people that are, like you said, tinkering in the garage or doing these systems for fun or fixing grandma's VCR. And it's just fun for us, you know. Maybe we're not normal people as an industry, but you know, that's what I love about it.
And she hits the nail on the head.
Right. I mean, you know, I get paid all day to play with speakers and mics and TVs and computers. And are you kidding me? That's my job. I love it. You know. So I think that there's a lot of truth that, you know, we're just tinkerers by nature, and that's where it comes from. So yeah, we are doing this for fun on a Saturday instead of flying a kite. You know,
because most of us can't fly a kite.
And if we are flying a kite, it's using a wireless touch panel with a RF link to the string.
Well, it's a TPS6X because it's wireless. And
some of those servaliers running out the string.
Has a gyroscopic control at the bottom of the... Wow. We come up with all kinds. Oh, we got to do that. Okay. New AV Nation contest. Whoever can come up with an automated kite flying machine.
Nice.
And it can't just hold the string.
You're not right. Moving on from our buddies over in Engadget.
Tim's had enough.
I love RoboCop. Let me just start there. I do. I don't like 2 and 3 and 5 and 10, but I do love the original. And the headline says, MGM delivers 600 movies to YouTube and Google Play, giving you one more place, or two more places actually, to watch RoboCop. We've talked about, you know, different ways that we can get content, and the fact that DVDs are dead and laser discs are long dead, and this, that, and the other.
Only because Tim killed them.
But I'm ignoring you now. This to me is another step and another nail in the whole DVD coffin, and another reason why stuff like, you know, the DVD CCA deal with Kaleidoscape is kind of a moot point. But this is just another evolution in media delivery. Sarah, we'll start with you. Is this MGM coming to the table finally? And is this maybe a sign of other studios coming to the whole, you know, internet delivery table? Or is it just MGM being ultra uber progressive?
Yeah, I sure hope so. I think we're kind of in the middle of an interesting thing when it comes to content, because it's like, it's hard to get older movies now, you know, like, you don't, if you wanted to watch some old movie that you didn't own but you wanted to watch on your home theater or whatever, you used to go to the movie store and rent it. But now, if you can find a movie store, you know, a movie rental place, they probably don't have it. I don't know. So
well,
I think
you probably don't have a movie rental place. Let's start there.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, so I'll give you an example that's really embarrassing. I'm kind of don't want to tell this, but last summer my friend wanted to watch Adventures in Babysitting, and then
that is my wife's favorite movie.
I love that movie.
Well, she wanted to.
Oh, you
that
love that movie?
I do. I had the biggest crush on her.
The girl in the movie is obsessed with Thor.
Yes.
Yes.
So I could not get the movie Adventures in Babysitting anywhere. It was not on Netflix, streaming, or disc. It was not at Blockbuster, which we do still have one for the moment. Obviously, it was not at Redbox or on iTunes, so we never watched it because it couldn't get it anywhere. I could have probably bought the original DVD online, but that, you know, I don't really have a need to buy Adventures in Babysitting. So
I think we bought the $5 version at that big Walmart value basket right outside the Big Ben. Mm-hmm. We were digging through that and saw it, bought it there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's where all of the existing copies of that movie live.
Yeah. $3 DVDs.
Yeah, exactly.
And ones like it, which is unfortunate because there's a lot of great movies like that.
So it's frustrating because I think that like streaming has so much like opportunity for the consumer if the movie studios can just get on board. And this, you know, is an example of one doing that, but they're sure not making it easy or quick.
No, they're not. Not by a long shot.
Even for people who are willing to pay money to watch things, you know?
Right.
Well, that's
I would have paid $5 to rent Adventures in Babysitting.
Did you check Amazon just out of curiosity?
What?
Did you check Amazon's streaming or Amazon's thingy?
No, but I didn't have a way to get that to my TV.
Okay. I bet you could have found it on BitTorrent.
Well, yes, if I wanted to.
Did I say that out loud?
My laptop and watch it, I probably could have.
Yeah, you know, that's the unfortunate part, though, Sarah, is that, you know, there is some great stuff out there, and even stuff that's more current, you got to look 10 different places to find it, because Netflix may have it or they may not. You may have to go to Google Play, or you may have to go to the iTunes store, or you just don't know where to find this stuff, and nobody's really got an aggregation point to get all this stuff. And, you know, I had a Hulu Plus account and a Netflix account and a iTunes account, and I finally just like, how do I find stuff, man? You know, you got to search all three places, and then you might get a hit to get what you're looking for. It's ridiculous.
And Sarah, just so you know, you could have watched it instantly on Amazon for $2.
Oh, do they have it?
Well, for, to
rent.
Know.
Yeah.
To rent. No kidding.
Yeah, and there's a couple different.
I guess I'll just be forced to purchase one of those Samsung smart TVs for that.
Well, what is it? Amazon is on a couple different things. They are on the Roku. You can get it on TiVo. And something else. I actually wish that Amazon stuff was on other things, like maybe the Apple TV or
the 360. Well, it'd be nice if there was any one device that had access to all the different services. But of course, the services are owned by different cable companies or movie studios, and they don't want to play together. So you either have like six boxes sitting on wherever you're keeping those. Or you just don't have access to them, which is the case, because I could have watched Amazon on my computer, but I had no way to get it to my TV. So,
well, it sounds like you need an AV integrator tweak head to help you with that.
No.
Yeah, because we can watch our computers on our TV.
you would think you knew one that wanted to.
We'll set you up, sweetie. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Well, so Dawn, you've got your stuff hooked up to your TV. Is this something, RoboCop aside and Adventures in Babysitting aside, is this something where you and Mr. A.B. Don can sit down at night and, you know, bring up Rocky or Rain Man or something like that? And is this them, you know, at least finally coming to the table and hopefully, you know, making others do as well?
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. That's one of the reasons why we made it so that when we want to watch something on we have a plasma. It's an old plasma at that, a Pioneer, you know, 503 CMX. It's
back.
Still going great, you know, but we hooked it up so that we could attach it to our computers and output to the screen, because we knew there was going to be content we wanted to watch on our computers that we just can't get, you know, through our satellite service. I was on the show a couple weeks ago when we talked about the whole lawsuit with the DVD companies and I don't even remember the company now. We were discussing... Yeah, Kaleidoscape, thank you. And we were discussing content delivery and the fact that it's now a content world. And, you know, I'm glad to see MGM's playing nice finally. I think we do need a central aggregator of all these different services. And it's not just the studios themselves not playing nice together. They're not playing nice with themselves and their services.
Right.
Case in point, you know, Mr. A.B. Don was a fabulous husband and got me the Kindle Fire for Christmas. And so now I've been playing with the Amazon streaming video and streaming movie, and we've rented a few things for $2.99 or whatever. And just in the past week, their gold box deal of the day was the Harry Potter movies that you could not rent, the Harry Potter movies for $3.99, which is the price they charge for renting. And it's the streaming version. Well, I was all over that because, you know, I'm a big old Harry Potter geek. But what was weird was they were offering 1 through 6 at $3.99 to purchase. And they offered 8, Deathly Hallows 2, for like $7.99 to purchase. But this first Deathly Hallows movie wasn't available. And it wasn't just not available. It wasn't just not available for the particular gold box deal. It wasn't available for streaming, for rental, or purchase on the Amazon streaming video, you know, content delivery system. And I was like, well, it's the same production company and the same studio and the same everything. What on earth? But, you know, so things like that, you know, still make us say, what's going on there, companies? You know, you need to get your ducks in a row. you know, so until they can get their own houses in order, I don't think we're going to see an aggregate place where we could just one subscription and get content to everything. And that's what people are demanding, and that's what where the world is going. But, you know, in the meantime, we cobble together, you know, computer output cables to our TVs, and we have our Amazon accounts and our Netflix and our HBO Go and hope for the best. But we're still going to miss things once in a while.
Well, yeah. And Sarah mentioned, you know, having six boxes. Some people, I am one of them. I have three HDMI connections on my TV. And so you go, okay, what do you really, really want?
Yeah, because you're not going to get them all.
No, I mean, I want my 360, you know, and my Apple TV, and I've got a Western Digital, which I guess technically I could do component or composite, and I've got a cable box in there somewhere, and, you know, so yeah, you've got, okay, so I've got this many things, and you know, Netflix is the one company, I think, regardless of the whole Quickster thing, that's done this right, because they're on all of them. I mean, seriously, yeah, every single stupid box I have has Netflix on it.
Yeah.
Yes, mine right. too.
You know,
I have a PlayStation and an Apple TV, and they both have Netflix, yeah. And neither of them have Amazon.
No,
Hulu. Not at all.
Although I'm hoping that the Apple TV will get Hulu eventually.
The 360 has Hulu.
Yeah.
If you have the Hulu Plus, but I don't.
You know what's what stinks about that?
They're never going to put regular Hulu on any devices now.
Well, that's just it. You know, it'd be great if they did.
Well, and the one on Western Digital, the interface is so horrendous that I actually unsubscribed from Hulu Plus because it was just you couldn't find anything. Hmm. It was awful, and they took off, you know, Doctor Who. So that was I was out at that point.
Actually, do you know where can you get Google Play besides like Android and Amazon devices?
That's a really
that's the
good
only
question.
Place I know. I've got a Galaxy Tab. I just downloaded it last night. That's
you
the only
can.
Place.
I mean, you could do like Don and Mr. AV. Don and Don. You could hook up your computer to your display, and you know, download it on your computer. But that's
get the Google TV.
Well, I shouldn't know if there was anything that like an integrator could set up easily for a. And end user or whatever, like if there was a TV or a box or something.
Well, we can use eScript with Crestron Control.
We'll give them time. I mean, Crestron this week. Not that it wasn't a story we were going to talk about, but Crestron this week released an integration with Pandora, so they're mm-hmm. capable of doing it.
Yeah.
You know, all right. Last and certainly not least, we come to the Rave Publications new Reader's Choice Award. Power to the people.
Yay.
that was an exciting group.
I think it's cool because we talked about this on the Daily Rave today, and Gary said something, and I was like, well, wait a minute, dude. What it is, first of all, is it's an opportunity for you as a reader of Rave Publications, and if you're not, you should be, so go there now, ravepubs.com. You can nominate currently up until May 6th, Sarah?
May 4th.
May 4th.
May 4th.
After May 4th, we're going to have the nominated companies be up and have people vote on the final winners.
Okay, so up until May 4th, you have the opportunity to nominate an AV company from everything from the best training program to the best website, the best control manufacturer, the best projector manufacturer, so on and so forth. And Gary's like, you know, a lot of these, you know, we know who's, you know, you guys know who the industry guys are going to be. You know, everybody's favorite manufacturer is this. Yeah, everybody's favorite control manufacturer is this. And I said, hold up, dude. Hang on. I said, there's an awful lot of rabid fans when it comes to certain manufacturers, and there are, which is why I'm mentioning this, because you know what? There's an awful lot of, you know, dyed-in-the-wool blue Extron guys or blue Crestron guys or what's AMX's colors?
Purple
guys. And I'm not discounting, you know, Savant and Control 4 and anybody else. So this is
you may have only said that because of the responses we've gotten so far for a couple of the categories.
Okay.
They've been almost unanimous in the nominations, but that's why, you know, we want to get the word out there because we really want input from everyone in the industry.
So kind of tell me how this is going to work, and then because you guys are going to, after May 4th, then there's an actual ballot, and then you guys are going to release the winners during Infocom.
Well, we do a couple awards a year, including after Infocom, we do awards based on what we see at the show. But we thought it'd be fun this year to do a Reader's Choice set of awards where we just ask the readers who their favorite manufacturers and products are and find out what everyone really thinks. So until May 4th, we're taking nominations for the 13 categories where you can nominate a company or a product and then just, you know, give us a few sentences why, because we want to know why. If there's some small company we don't even know about that someone really thinks is the greenest AV manufacturer, then we want to know why you think that, and we'll take that into consideration. And then after that, we'll be able to vote on the final winners.
I have a suggestion for a category next year.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Your favorite AV podcast.
Oh, yeah.
What favorite AV podcast host?
No, I didn't say host. I simply said podcast.
I'm going to suggest that category.
Oh, yeah.
And say, oh, Tim, but the problem is then that dude in Australia will win, and then I'll feel bad.
Right. Will. He's actually a pretty cool guy.
Or you'd be up against all your other podcast hosts.
We got to get up at the butt crack of dawn to talk to him, but he's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that was an early morning.
Yeah.
That was.
I think Don was still asleep when we talked to him.
Usually. My name may be Don, but I've never voluntarily seen
there
one.
There we
so.
Are. There it is.
Wow, wow.
So, all kidding aside, go to ravebubs.com and put your 2 cents in for, you know, everything from your favorite screen manufacturer to mounts and so, everything like that. So that is all I have. Does anybody else have anything you want to rant about or just, you know, say, hey, this is kind of cool? Anybody? Michael, you still with us? Are you playing still?
I'm playing.
You're playing on your...
Yeah,
on
I'm
your
watching Madonna and the...
And the gorillas.
And the gorillas still.
All right. So, Miss A.V. Dawn has been with us. She is the fabulous marketing and media coordinator for NetAV. You can find her at, she's a blogger for Rave Pubs. So, you can find her at ravepubs.com. You can find her at avdawn.com. And also the Twitterverse. You can find her there under at A.V. Dawn. Thank you so much for joining us, ma'am.
Thanks for having me.
Miss Sarah Abrams is editor extraordinaire at Rave Pubs. She's the one that keeps most of us in line. At least she tries to a lot of times. Sends me really, really, really good in-depth emails and says, can you please stop doing that?
It's called constructive criticism, Tim.
Okay, everyone's podcast hates me.
It's constructive when she does it. It's just complaining when you do it.
Well, this is true. But I mean, come on. It's easier to take it from her. She's sweeter than I am. I can't help it.
She's also more literate than you are, too.
Well,
so.
This is true, but that's I wasn't going to
say She's more
state
educated
it.
Than you are.
Hey, you can stop there.
Blushing.
Michael got kicked out of Bible school this first semester, so he's never been
Oh, there. Really?
Yeah, it's a
There's
long
a whole story.
There's a whole story that we won't get into because
we went into it on another show. One
I want
time.
To keep my clean rating. So
let's just say I wasn't meant for Bible college.
He's not allowed back in any Assembly of God church ever again. But thank you, seriously, Sarah, for joining us. So
yeah, it was my pleasure.
You can find her and all her blog stuff on ravepubs.com. Mr. Michael Drainer, Mr. Kicked Out of Bible College.
Yes, sir.
He is from Tech Electronics, the sound and AV systems manager. He has a blog. He has a Twitter. He doesn't do either. But if you'd like to follow his non-tweets, they are at Michael Drainer. And his blog is michaeldrainer.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just repeat Tim's tweets and Don's tweets and George's tweets. And
probably
Sarah's
the smartest thing you can do.
It is. You don't want to hear what I have to say, that's
no.
for sure.
If you'd like to follow mine, it's Tim T.D. Albright, Tim David Albright. But more importantly for me, and actually everybody here and all the other guys that help us out, please go to the website. Check out all of our other podcasts. We have a daily one we do with Gary Kay, where he sounds really smart, and I just press record, basically. it's called the Daily Rave. George Tucker has a whole lot of them. a whole lot of other people do a whole lot of really, really good and great work. So go to the website, ravepubs.com/AVNation. ravepubs.com/AVNation. Thank you so much for listening. That's all the time we have for AV Week.